Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to another edition of On the Continent, your one-stop shop for everything to do with European football. I'm Dotson Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Lars Watson.
On today's edition, it's all kicking off at Borussia Dortmund. The question is, what's football got to do with it? Also, PSG versus Real Madrid. Well, it's Neymar versus Benzema, if you like. Who's going to come out on top in the big Champions League clash? And cherchez la femme. We discuss the state of French women's football.
Let's kick off with this Dortmund. I think we should start with Lars, you know, because I'll tell you what, Dortmund, as keen listeners to OTC will know, are the team that are currently hosting the best centre-forward that's ever come out of Norway.
Except or anywhere.
Stefan Iversen's playing for Dortmund.
So we've kicked it off
Alex
right.
Söderlund.
Except the Norwegian connection wasn't playing. He was in the stands when Dortmund lost terribly to Bayern Leverkusen.
Yes. So this is a very simple and very complicated section, because I remember seeing in the notes before we were doing the show, it's just WTF Dortmund. And I thought, yep, we don't know. That's I have in my notes, Dortmund, weak. Because
they were
many exclamation marks. They were not good against Leverkusen. That was a bad performance. One of their worst under Marco Rose. And you saw some shots of Erling Haaland looking upset in the stands. I would say, though, I wouldn't read too much into this. I mean, people are always trying to read too much into anything that's to do with Erling Haaland. I think he's just, we've seen this before, when he's not playing, he's incredibly passionate and doesn't exactly hide his emotions in the stands. He cheers like he does on the pitch when the team scores, and he's very upset when they don't win. And I think he was just really cross that the team got spanked. I mean, there's not much more to it than that, I don't think.
That's the interesting thing, I think, Lars, with where Dortmund are at the moment, because this was a humiliating defeat. As you say, the performance was maybe even worse than the result. I think it could have been worse than 5-2. But it feels relatively consequence-free, certainly in the short term, because you had people coming out afterwards and going, well, that's the title race over. There wasn't a title race in the first place. They were never catching Bayern in the first place. Even with Leverkusen winning that game, they're still 5 points behind Dortmund in second place. I would say it's almost certain that Dortmund are going to hold on to second place. And as you say, with Erling Haaland, he's not going to stay at the end of the season anyway.
I don't think there's a chance of that.
Like, his reaction to that is, A, completely consistent with his reactions most of the time.
Yeah.
And B, why are we even talking about
it? Inconsequential.
In terms of where he ends up, okay, there's something to be filled in. But whether he actually leaves Dortmund, it's not a whether anymore. It's really not.
Mm.
I think what we've got to look at here is where Dortmund are in terms of where they do end up next season. Because Marco Rosa, as you said, has been there all season now. They moved a lot to get him. They paid a release fee. There's a bit of a wrangle to get him out of Borussia Mönchengladbach, and he had to serve out the rest of last season with very bad feeling. And he's had time to work with the players now. And specifically before this game, he had time to work with them as well, because they had a couple of weeks off. And you would have thought time on the training pitch at this point in a season is absolute gold dust. It's not something that you normally get. And I don't know about you, but I watched that game and I thought, what have you been working on?
Yeah.
Like, there's no organisation, no shape.
The
shape when they haven't got the ball. Every time they lost the ball, they looked like they were going to concede a goal. It's that simple. You know the way that Leverkusen are going to play. And it was actually very like Lucien Favre's last game in charge. That's the concerning thing, where they lost 5-1 at home to Stuttgart.
That was the exact game I was going to bring up. Yeah, it did remind you of that.
That's the thing, isn't it? And you think that was now... A, that was the game that finished Favre, and obviously it had been building up for a while. And B, that was 14 months ago, and has really that much changed? I guess the question is it Rosa? Has he not made enough of an impression? Or is it something about the club, their priorities, and the way they're running things?
Yeah, and there was a collective failure here, and we shouldn't get away from that. But I think there's also a slightly more simple solution to some of this, which is, if you look at this team... So you start in midfield. Like, Bellingham is a combative figure, but he's primarily an attacking midfielder, you'd have to say. Mo Dahoud is not a proper ball-winning central midfielder, and Julian Brandt certainly isn't. So, I mean, you're quite light in that department in terms of winning challenges and winning the ball and being defensively solid. And if you look at defence, like Akanji and Zagadou, like I wouldn't trust any of them to look after my dog. You know, they're something there. They're not bad players, and maybe next to someone brilliant that they could form a good partnership, but they're both error-prone and unreliable. And neither fullback, Munier or Guerrero, are a good defender. So you look at the whole back seven in this team, there's not one outstanding defensive player there. Not one. Mm. And I do think you can have days where things fail collectively and you aren't aggressive enough and things kind of fall apart. But if you have one or two players at least who can win some challenges and in the words of Roy Keane, just smash someone to make me feel better. Like just sort of make a battle of it when things aren't going your way. That can help you. And Dortmund don't have that at all. And you can throw an Axel Witsel, who can't really run that much anymore. I mean, that doesn't help. You can throw Hummels in there. Hasn't really been a successful transfer for them. So they just lack solidity on a personnel side.
And always lacked it, have they? Something's happened.
There's been a soft underbelly to that team for a long time, I think.
In defence as well, because the problem
when,
with this...
When was the last time you looked at Dortmund and said, that team knows how to defend?
Yeah.
We're going back a while, aren't we?
It's a very long time ago. And I think this is why it was so interesting to see the week they've had, because it's not just about that game.
Because that's the next thing we're coming on to.
Well, yeah, they go and they sign Niklas Süle, who is not just from Bayern, he's a Bayern first teamer, and he's a very good defender.
Yep.
And what I think's interesting is if you needed reinforcement of the fact that he will be a good signing for Borussia Dortmund, I think you look at, like, now the briefings that are leaking out of Bayern in that, oh, well, Süle came back from... he came back from the Christmas break 4 kilos overweight, and
didn't want him to go.
Exactly. And we have
they're briefing against him.
Yeah,
yeah, they're feeding him too much.
This would not come out. If they were indifferent.
Coming out of Bayern for a reason.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, Oliver Kahn's already said why they let him go is because of money. Because they got to a point, you can't pay everyone. You know, it's that simple. And you know, you talked about it relatively recently. Last, they've got some contractual decisions to make. They've got the top of that pile is they've got to re-up Gnabry. They've got to re-up Corentin Tolisso, who's played very well in the last couple of months, out of contract this summer. So those are the immediates, and that's before you get to Neuer, Lewandowski, and Müller, who all expire contract in the same summer in 2023. So they've got some stuff to deal with.
But you expect them to rebuild, though, don't you? And I'm just looking at Dortmund now, and you're thinking...
But that's Zula's a great start. I mean, I don't think Süle can be the start and the end of it. I think Nico Schlotterbeck, who's also been mentioned, that it would be a good partner for him. It's interesting because it seems that their contract discussions with the aforementioned Manuel Akanji have sort of like run aground. I think they're spending the money that they would have been spending on his contract extension on Süle. And really, you'd rather be spending the money on Süle than him. But it's very interesting that they've convinced Süle to come, because there was interest from other big clubs around Europe.
I did see reports suggesting that Akanji wanted, you know, top money to extend, which just made me think, from what position are you making that demand? Like, he's someone who's been there. Like, we're talking about how Dortmund have looked shabby at the back for years. I mean, he's been a constant. Like, he's someone who hasn't kicked on the way we hoped and frankly thought when he came from Switzerland.
Someone will pay him that. I honestly think someone will pay him that this summer. I think they'll end up selling him with a year left on his contract, and someone will give him the money he wants. Whether they should is a different question.
Yeah. Anyway, Süle coming in and as a start of a rejig of that defence makes a lot of sense. And I think I'm sure it is a lot about money, but I think the point that he makes publicly, Süle, I mean, he says that Watzke, Zorc, Sebastian Kehl and Marco Rose really impressed me with their vision of the role I can take at BVB, and I have the feeling of being wanted as a player and a footballer, which feels a bit pointed, as much as maybe Bayern weren't prepared to give him the exact money he wanted, but also maybe they didn't make him feel like he was the main man. I mean, there is probably a sense there that if everyone's fit, Upamecano and Lucas Hernandez is the centre half pairing, but everyone being fit is a big but here. And also the reality is, you know, no defender has played more minutes in the league for Bayern this season than Süle. Only Lewandowski, Neuer, Müller, Kimmich and Sané have more minutes in the league. So of the defenders, you know, he's been their go-to guy.
I mean, he could be vital for the way they play, not just because he's a good defender, not just because he's a good age. He's mobile.
And he doesn't look it.
That is something
because
he doesn't.
He is a big unit. And I'm sure as much as the weight reports are malicious, I mean, they're probably not untrue, but if you actually watch the football, he gets around the pitch well for a guy his size and shape. And
does this all go to the core of the issues for Dortmund, though? Because we suddenly started talking football. We started off looking at their off-pitch issues, of which they're quite considerable. I just wonder whether fixing the defence, for example, is going to be the solution, or whether there's still going to be issues.
As someone who tends to sort of bring big-picture theories and, you know, galaxy brain takes and stuff to this table, I would just want to simplify it with Dortmund. They need better defensive players on the field. I don't think it's actually much more complicated than that. I don't think this, as much as what happened against Leverkusen, yes, there was a collective failure, and yes, you have to look at the coaching, but I don't think there is a version of real life where that defensive personnel can sustain a Bundesliga title challenge. I just don't think they're good enough on an individual basis.
I guess the question is, it always seems a little bit unfair comparing them to Bayern, because Bayern do have twice the wage bill. Mm. They do have all the success behind them. But Dortmund have shown, or previous incarnations of Dortmund have shown in the past, that with the right planning, with the right organisation, that you can make the challenge. It just hasn't felt like they're anywhere close to doing that and making the most of their resources, which I think is the issue. Now, if there's going to be a time to attack it, it is now, because if you look at, we talked about the contractual flux and maybe a generational flux at Bayern, even though they will at the end of it still end up with an excellent team. There's no doubt about that. And you look at everything changing upstairs as well, with Rummenigge and Hoeneß moving on. They're entering a different phase.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting time. And just on Dortmund, I thought I saw this on social media, popular social media website, Twitter. Josh Sim at Josh Sim 8 made the point that he writes, maybe Robert Andrecht isn't a Dortmund-level player, but it's clear that Leverkusen benefit from having him in their midfield, adding defensive balance. It's the kind of signing Dortmund should be making and can afford to, but choose not to inexplicably, which I think is a really good point. You know, just have a good defensive midfielder in there, you know, just buy a proper centre half who can win challenges and defend, you know, you need a couple of hard fellas in that team. As much as we talk about the exciting attacking talent that's always at Dortmund, they need to be more solid.
Just a final point on this, obviously, for many of our listeners, they'll be interested in seeing, even though Lars says we shouldn't read too much into this 5-2 defeat Dortmund by Bayern Leverkusen. However, Jude Bellingham is there in the mix of all of that, and many of our listeners will know, well, where does all of this issue, all these issues at Dortmund leave him?
Yeah, I think we can read quite a lot into that result, really. I just think we can't, what I meant was we can't read too much into Erling Haaland's situation from it. I would read plenty into the result.
I understand why you're more interested in Erling Haaland.
No, but I'm saying on Bellingham, the big question is, obviously, he looks like someone who is perhaps ready for greater things. He's someone who the great and the good of the English Premier League will want to try to sign this summer. The question is, can Dortmund be persuaded to let more than one of their stars go in the same summer? And I'm not sure they want to. I think they know there's no real way of keeping Haaland at the club this summer. And with some money coming in and still having made a good price from Sancho last summer, I don't think they feel the need to sell anyone, and I think Bellingham's going to stay.
Yeah, I think it's unlikely they sell both in the summer. Also, this underlined the fact that, brilliant as he is, he's still a work in progress. He had a terrible game. He had a really terrible game, and part of that is to do with the players around him. But it does go back to the intrinsic issues at Dortmund that go beyond the coach, because it's not a healthy situation where your best two players are 18 and 21. That shows that you've got it wrong in terms of recruiting the more experienced players, and as Lars was pointing out, maybe the less garlanded ones.
And lastly on Bellingham, the thing we know about Dortmund that we learned, not this summer, but the one before that with Sancho, is that when they say no, they mean no. If they don't want to sell someone, they won't. I think there are a few fans and even clubs in this country who tend to assume that money will always solve it at some point. But Dortmund are entirely capable of putting their foot down and say, we're just not letting him go. And I suspect that'll happen.
Ой-ой-ой-ой-ой, что за триллер на Энфилде? Притворяет, что этот Зальцбург? Эрлинг Браут Холланд.
Let's talk about PSG and obviously the big draw that they're facing in the Champions League versus Real Madrid. Some people might look at it in the old school way and say, oh, that's Neymar versus Benzema. But it's more than that. It's got to be more than that. They're not the ones that have kept us salivating about this draw for a while.
Well, they might not play. I think that's the huge thing. Because Neymar has... I think taken longer than expected to come back from his ankle problem.
He's still on social media.
He's never going to be off it. I think talking of social media, it was interesting to see just before we came on, actually, Karim Benzema giving us a little wave from the gym, because it's been apparent this week that Real Madrid are genuinely worried about him not making this game. And that would be a huge thing for them. I think you go back to last week when he's coming back from his hamstring injury. And last Friday's training, he pulls up a little early. Now, Real Madrid have tried to play it down. They've tried to say, you know, it wasn't quite right. We're going to take our foot off the gas a little bit and see how he goes. You know, they're right to be super careful with hamstrings. But then you get to the league game they play last weekend against Granada, where they give quite a flat, quite a toothless performance. They've got no one to stand in for him. I realise that nominally they've got Luka Jovic. Well, they clearly don't trust him. And I would say probably quite rightly so, on the form of the last couple of years. You look at the last couple of games where they played... played Isco as a sort of false nine, if you like, and Marco Asensio has played in that spot recently as well. And then you look at the bench, you look at the fact that Dani Ceballos came in and played some minutes at the end of the Granada game as well, and some of the other players that were on the bench. You think Ancelotti has done an exceptional job at Real Madrid this season, but it's not just, I don't think it's just about Benzema being out, if he is out. It's symptomatic of something else, that they are still a work in progress. And you remember how we were kind of fooled into thinking by Atletico Madrid winning the league last season that they were further ahead than where they actually are. Mm. And it's becoming abundantly clear that there's still a lot of transition going on this season by the unevenness that's happened both in La Liga and in the Champions League. I'm thinking that Real Madrid, who are obviously preparing a very big summer, are actually in a similar boat.
But we spoke about that in the summer when Ancelotti was brought in, that he made sense as a choice because they're not going to... This is not a perfect squad. Like, this is a squad that has a lot of issues and is not going to be perfect, and you just need an experienced hand who will just sort of not freak out and just raise an eyebrow. And, you know, we'll figure it out. We'll figure out something. And I think the fact that Isco, for all his limitations, was used as a stand-in for Benzema is quite telling, because it tells you a lot about Benzema's role. As much as we focus on the goals he's been scoring this season, he's so important as a facilitator. I mean, if we look at what's gone right for Real Madrid, why they are in the league in spite of all these issues, it is that Benzema's having an amazing season, but also that Vinicius Jr. has emerged as this sort of fantastic player. And part of, not taking anything away from him, but part of why he's been so good is that he has a centre forward in Benzema. I was very generous in terms of laying on chances for him and occupying defenders and providing assists and all that. So if you take Benzema out of it, they lose more than their top scorer. I mean, he really is the guy who makes their attack work.
Okay, but the issue is that there are two people or two teams in this fixture. Whatever Real Madrid, however Real Madrid approaches this Champions League fixture will depend on whether Neymar or whoever else PSG have got is playing. And also Pochettino, in the midst of all this, he's going through a hard time. You're saying that Carlo Ancelotti is doing well at Real Madrid, but arguably now Mauricio Pochettino is at the other end of the spectrum at PSG. He came into the job on a high. He's on a low at the moment. How would that affect this fixture?
Which is telling, and which is why this is a very interesting game from the PSG perspective. Good Lord. From the PSG perspective.
Say in Norwegian.
Frapper Paris Saint-Germain's perspective.
Actually, say in English.
Because the league is a nonsense, right? I mean, the Liga, from PSG's perspective, just almost doesn't matter. I mean, L'Equipe are reporting this week that PSG's wage bill is now 37% of the total wage expenditures in Liga. So you have one team who's paying close to 40% of all the salary in an entire division. I mean, you can have a discussion, is this even competitive sports anymore? It is a nonsense. And it means, even though they're top of the league, now, that's no credit in the bank for Pochettino. I mean, they're going to win the league quite comfortably, as it looks like, but he's still under a lot of pressure because they haven't been playing well. I mean, they've put together a team that looks kind of like the Harlem Globetrotters of football, and people are expecting to be entertained every weekend. But as we've discussed at length on this pod, there are a lot of square pieces here, and there are some round holes that aren't being filled, and because of that, the team doesn't make any sense and doesn't work.
More round holes than they have in Blackburn, Lancashire. Potholes.
Well, of course. This is slightly low, but listen, what does Sven Botman, Matteo Guendouzi, Jason Denier, Idrissa Ganagay, Ander Herrera, Norwegian-Albanian man Elba Rashani, former Huddersfield striker Steve Mounier, and Sofiane Boufal all have in common?
Tell me.
Go on.
They've all scored more goals in Liga this season than Lionel Messi.
Wow.
Boom.
Should we be surprised at that?
Surprised, yes. Shocked, no. Because I think you have to be fair to Messi. No pre-season. And we always talk about the leap between leagues. He has come to a much more physical league. And whereas it surprised Latan, and then he thought, let's fight fire with fire, Messi
doesn't
have that type of fire.
He's got the skills,
let's say.
He does have six assists, to be fair to him.
I think that is that those are two things that are quite hard to get past. Mm. Also, I think, as we've said right from the start of the season, I do think the Mbappe, Neymar, Messi is unsustainable. And really, going into this tie, if he's only got two of them, Pochettino, I don't think that's such a bad thing. I think that's maybe beneficial to the overall shape
of the
team. And
we know which two
of
those are. It's not going to be Mbappe that's staying.
Well, no, next season. That's different. That's a whole other problem for them.
I think Pochettino was hoping it won't be his problem.
I don't think it will be for one single second. And going back to last point about the wages, obviously it's not a great recipe for a sustainable competition. But I think if you look at the way European football is generally, you look at the dominance up until very recently of Juventus for all those successive seasons, you look at Bayern in Germany, Liga has actually been more open than that. Mm. But what it takes, when you've got a power that's far stronger than all the rest, like with Bayern, you need them to dip a little bit and everyone else to be ready to receive the opportunity. None of these teams are at the moment. None of these clubs are. And I think the pandemic situation is part of that. But also is poor organisation and poor recruitment in the case of a lot of these clubs. And that's why you've seen Nice with a not wild spending model, but investing a little bit of money and having the best coach in the division in Christophe Galtier, being able to climb up
Andy. That's throwing shade on Pochettino.
I mean, he's not the best coach in the division. Is that simple?
Andy, if you owned, say if you won the Euro Millions and you were going to turn AFC Wimbledon into, of course, something the club should
Galtier.
Never be. You would have.
Didn't we beat you lot the other day? Sorry, just thought to mention that. Let's leave that to one side. This is OTC, by the way.
No, because I don't want the players just to be well coached. I want them to suffer.
And so you don't want Pochettino? I mean, come on, man. I'm derailing the conversation completely here. That's not my intention.
I mean, I don't want to derail the conversation further, but I think as time goes by, David Cartledge's take on here a couple of weeks ago about Pochettino being an interesting option for Atletico, I think gets better and better as time goes by. In terms of there being pressure on Pochettino at the moment, it's not, as you say, Lars, about him going at the end of the season. We all know he's going at the end of the season. The question is, if they don't get it right in these two games against Real Madrid, do they keep him until the end of the season? There's a growing sense in France.
They can do whatever. If they go out of the Champions League, it doesn't matter what they do until the end of the season, right? Because they're going to win Liga anyway.
Well, they're out of the cup. That's the point.
So you could just let, let Sergio Ramos be player manager for the lols or something. I mean, nothing matters at all.
Maybe not the player half of it these days. But I think that might be the point where they would consider blooding Zidane a little bit early.
Makes sense.
Which I think would be interesting. I mean, the level of anger at the club, and particularly with Nasser Al-Khelaifi, the president, when they got knocked out of the Coupe de France. Now, you may think that is like an unimportant trinket in their season, what they're looking at. You know, they're obviously, the Champions League or bust has always been their thing. But it turns out that Al-Khelaifi really likes the Coupe de France. He cut his holiday off early to come back to that. And then they end up getting knocked out of it on penalties by Nice, with two saves from Marcin Bulka, who is owned by PSG and currently on loan to Nice as their reserve goalkeeper.
That
hurt Pochettino. But I think, you know, we've talked a lot about the star project there and how it's very alien to him, how he has to shepherd these superstars rather than, you know, go for a young, zesty collective. Even if you're looking at a superstar model, what's been the most difficult thing for Pochettino is that the players who he wants to be his dressing room leaders, who he wants to provide the heart and the spirit of the team, apart from Marquinhos, who, you know, creates unanimity everywhere, really, he wants his leaders to be Keylor Navas. He wants his leaders to be Angel Di Maria. They are both marginalised by the signings that Leonardo has made, which is a huge problem. I think it's actually quite a problem in the context of this tie, where they still look like quite disparate talent and maybe not quite a team.
But this is why football is such a fun sport, is that we can talk for a long time, and I do enjoy it, about how dysfunctional PSG are and in how many different ways they're nonsense. But it's still 90 minutes of 11v11, and the 11 PSG have, as much as they don't fit together, some of them are really good. And it is one through ball in behind the defence and Mbappe running away from everyone and you've scored a goal and, you know, suddenly you're through.
Yeah, we watched the PSG Manchester City game together. I think we've seen this before.
Exactly right. Like, no matter what's wrong with the team, this can always happen. And bizarrely, for everything that Pochettino is not very popular and definitely gone, I mean, he could still win the Champions League with them. It's such a weird sport. Can I just say, lastly, Andy, with your Christophe Galtier AFC Wimbledon revolution, I mean, if we both win the Euro Millions, which I know is statistically unlikely, but if we do, I might have to fund them, but fund like the Kilburn Killjoys or something, and put Maurizio Pochettino in charge of them, and we'll see who goes the furthest.
I think your Charlton are just about to get a major investment in League One.
As long as they keep beating AFC Wimbledon, I'm happy.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Join me, Pete Donaldson, and YouTuber Chris Broad as we offer you a taste of life in the most exciting country in the world on our podcast, Abroad in Japan. Whether it's crazy bars, unique vending machines, or tips for learning Japanese, we cover it all. Recently, we even heard a particularly unique chat-up line.
While we were chatting, a local Japanese guy in his early 30s made his way over to me and started chatting in broken English. Ooh. Our chat about general stuff was going all right before he proudly announced, I like big girls. To me,
wow.
To me, with a wink. Truly flattering, flirting right there.
Search Abroad in Japan wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes every Wednesday and Sunday.
Abroad in Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
So we're staying in France, but we're focusing now on the state of women's football in France. I know one of the great women's footballers playing in the French League has been speaking. She's Norwegian. Mm. I'm not going to try and pronounce her name, even though I could, but you claim that it's Swedish.
May have been some aggro affair to do with this. Oh, the heck about you? Now, we get some comments about this. Your pronunciation of my name and Nordic names are fine, but you pronounce them in a very Swedish manner. Now, I will.
Is there a difference?
I will fully accept you pronouncing me as if I was Swedish. That's fine, but you're not going to Swedify Ada Hegerberg. We're not having that. No, Ada Hegerberg. So I find the best way to explaining her, and it's a bit of a shorthand, and it's a bit lazy, and it's a bit flawed, but in a way that everyone will understand what kind of character she is that she's kind of the Cristiano Ronaldo of women's football.
Whoa.
And it's a little bit simplistic, but what I mean by that is, and I really don't like those comparisons, but I'm making it anyway, is because she's someone who is totally, totally, totally dedicated to becoming a better player, to scoring goals, and has absolutely no concern at all about who she might upset or annoy along the way. She's so totally single-minded in her focus, and she's become very, very, very successful. Her record since moving to Lyon is absolutely mind-boggling. Her goal-scoring record, this is per Lyon's website, by the way. I'm not sure that's fully up to date, but the statistics on Lyon's website said is that she's played 184 games for them, and in those games scored 220 goals.
It's amazing.
It's pretty amazing. Extraordinary. And I'm not even sure that's 100% up to date.
I'm not even sure that Cristiano Ronaldo can match that.
Absolute menace of a striker. Now, she won the first ever women's Ballon d'Or in 2018, but you may not have heard a lot about her recently because she's been injured. She's missed almost 2 years of football, having first torn her ACL and then later suffering a fatigue fracture. So she's had some like three operations and had really bad go of it with injuries, but she's back playing now. And that's sort of her background. That's the kind of character she is, and which is why she's become quite famous throughout this. And so when she opens her mouth and speaks, you know, there is some attention paid to it.
Yeah, and this week she tweeted after France said it was pitching to host the Women's Euros in 2025, and she said hosting a tournament is great. Getting your own domestic competitions in order is better. And she's very critical of the FFF, the French Federation, for what they've done or what they haven't done with their league. And it's a huge thing. And I think for her, someone who's intensely competitive, as Lars says, and has, you know, been at the very top, multiple Champions League winner, hat-trick scorer in the final, if we go back a couple of years as well. I think she looks around and sees what Lyon and PSG are able to do and what the league is reduced to, in that it really is just a battle between those two. And I know sometimes we like to characterise other leagues in football as being that, but this really just does come down to the two games between those two. The drop off between Lyon and PSG and the rest of the league is enormous, and something needs to be done about that. I mean, she said her words were the league is a total shambles. Now, it has been nationally televised for the last couple of years, but in terms of what's actually put in, to put it into some sort of perspective, the French league has about 1/9 of the TV money that, say, the Women's Super League in England has. Mm. And that is a huge problem. And if you're her, and if you're part of this Lyon team that has been, like, for years, maybe not now, maybe it's Barcelona, but spent years being the best ever women's club team, arguably. And then you think, why haven't you capitalised on that? I can understand her anger. At last, she's not been afraid to speak out before.
No.
She quit the Norway international team, national team, at 22.
She did, at the height of her powers, decided not to do it anymore, which is interesting. It's worth talking about. It's a very complicated situation, and we don't have many hours here, so I'm going to have to limit myself a little bit and simplify. But the crux of it is, as I understand it, is that she felt the women's team wasn't being treated well enough, that the standards of training, of communication, of logistics, accommodation, just everything just wasn't at a high enough level. And she, of course, has been playing for Lyon, and God bless him, and Jean-Michel Aulas, there's a place where the women's team is taken very seriously.
Yeah, two affects one, there's no doubt about that.
It's not just the fact that they put money into it, but they train with the same facilities as the men. They eat in the same canteen as the men's team. They're completely, you know,
integrated.
Treated equally.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah.
Treated equally. And her having lived that day to day for a while, she kind of felt when she went away to play with an international team, suddenly it was different again. And as someone who is ambitious, who's almost pathologically driven to improve and always become better, she felt that when she brought up issues with the Norwegian FA, that they were not receptive to that criticism, and that it was just slightly annoying to have her piping up all the time about how things ought to be better, which then made her feel unwelcome and like she was wasting her time and energy. And there's one thing she said which really struck me, and this is a couple of years ago, is that she kind of felt that when she'd been away from Lyon and when she'd been with the national team for a couple of weeks on international breaks, she felt like she'd regressed as a footballer because the training and everything just wasn't at a high enough level. Now, her point has always been that I want to be the best player I can possibly be. And she felt playing for the national team was a hindrance in that regard. And listen, there's no doubt that she can be a challenging person to work with. But all top competitors are. And I'm sure she'd be the first to admit that she hasn't always put forward all of her criticisms in the most diplomatic manner. But the point of it is, and this is why Ada Hegerberg is such an interesting case and why I think she's worth talking about here, is that, I'm sorry, if she was a man, I think we would call her a winner. We would talk about how she has an elite mentality and all of this.
Yeah.
And that she's a great champion, which is a word we use. But because she is a woman, I think there are a lot of people in positions of authority who are more likely to just think she's difficult.
But actually, should we not be talking about the state of French football? Are we surprised that the state of French women's football has prompted this kind of response when we know that the state of French football overall has, over the last couple of years in particular, just falling apart with all the TV money going, etc.? Isn't that a knock-on effect? You said that the revenue of the women's football is only, you know, a ninth of...
I was slightly taken aback by that, given, as you say, how Lyon has been, even for someone who's...
It's self-financing.
Yeah.
That's the thing, but that's obviously not possible for other clubs like Soyuz or Bordeaux or teams like that. And that's where it needs to change. But I think it's a discussion, it's a healthy discussion to have. And it's not a discussion that's been had in the men's game, actually. Now, of course, the pandemic is something different. But I think for a player of one of the best teams or the best team to come out and say, do you know what? We need more competition in this league. No one's ever come out and said that about Ligue 1, the men's Ligue 1. No one has ever come out and said that. What the sense has been is that we are lucky to have the millions of Paris Saint-Germain. We are lucky that people, the Qataris pour in this money and make Zlatan Ibrahimovic come here and make Neymar come here and make us more globally watched. There's never a sense of... but what about the competitive balance of the league? And I think that is a good description or a good microcosm of where men's football is anyway. You know, that it's about branding more than sport nowadays, that more than competitive sport, it's moving away from that, which is obviously a great pity. I think that because... women's football in France is at an earlier point. Hegerberg, because she's visionary, has seen that and said, you know what? We've got a chance to change this. We've got a chance to shape the future and make it differently. And for someone of her profile, as well as her quality of as a footballer, and, you know, she's got endorsements for days. You know, she's not just a great footballer. She's got a voice. She's backed by Nike and Hublot and all these other brands. For her to come out and say that, I think is a very positive thing for sport.
And what she says, you could, like I was saying, reflect. You could put that and just reflect on the state of French football, where PSG are at the top, doesn't seem like a huge amount. I know Lille and Lyon, etc. I know
have their moments,
etc. But in terms of financial differential, they're not actually going to have a moment like that in the very near future, unless they do an Atletico Madrid, and that would be wonderful. And we'll come back, no doubt, and talk about the state of French football. It never seems to go away. We always get a lot of responses on social media, and we're very grateful to you for that. You can always tweet us at any time during the week at Football Ramble, at Dotton Adebayo, at Andy Brassel, and at Lars Severston. This question is from Matija Pisk, and this was sent to us on an email. It's a good question, actually. My girlfriend and I are going on our first trip away together this weekend to Porto. Andy!
Brilliant.
She's not really a football fan, so I'm somewhat hopefully suggested the idea of catching a Porto game. It turns out she was very up for it. And to make things even better, it just as happens to be the Primeira Liga top of the table clash between FC Porto and Sporting at the Estádio de Dragão this Friday night. I've got some tickets and I'm in love. So remember that I'm in love bit. It's really important to...
I'm not sure whether love's directed.
He's in love.
That's
it's
nice.
It's a Shakespearean thing.
Good.
Yeah. Borrow Cupid's wings
Absolutely.
And soar with them above a common bound. I'm too pierced in... Oh, gosh, I missed it. I'm too sore and pierced with his shaft half to soar with his light feathers, therefore in love's heavy burden do I sink. And to sink in it, should you burden love, too great oppression for a tender thing. But what he wanted to know on this fixture was, so a win for Porto would send them 9 points clear. So this is a must win for Sporting. If they 100%. Have any chance, if they have any chance of catching up, who are the Portuguese stars of tomorrow to look out for? I'm presuming he wants to show his missus that, you know, he's on top of it.
Yeah.
Who are the Portuguese? What was that laugh?
Sorry.
Yeah.
That was entirely accidental.
Yeah, right. Who are the Portuguese stars of tomorrow to look out for? And of course, any pre-match restaurant bar recommendations?
Well, I think as far as the food goes, go on the fly, get yourself a Bifana.
Yes.
And you won't regret it. You've got plenty of other nights for lovely meals by the river.
And a glass of Porto?
Yeah, absolutely.
Pre-match, I'd say go for the Vino Verde. Like, having a port before the game is weird. You need something lighter.
Yeah, something more, that's a bit more digestive, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Have the port after. No, have it after. I'm just saying. Have some Vino Verde before with the Bifana.
Lars has got strong views on this. I've got strong views on, as Sergio Conceição does, on
super bock.
The exit of Luis Diaz, of course, who's just left for Liverpool. He's not happy about that, although I tend to think they will go on and win the league without him. Sporting had a better transfer window. They got in Marcus Edwards, the young Englishman, for a start, and he's already made his debut. I'm interested to see what he can do in this. In terms of the young Portuguese players, if you go back like 10 years to the great Porto teams of André Villas-Boas, and before that when you go to Josualdo Ferreira's teams, there's a lot of South Americans. There are still South Americans, of course, Pepe, but you've got quite a lot of young Portuguese players who are getting their go with Porto. Now, Vitinha, who didn't really work out over here with Wolves, although I know some at Wolves who would have liked him to stay and continue growing there. He wasn't completely without promise. He's in good form at the moment. Scored a brilliant goal at Arouca last weekend. And I think you look at Fabio Vieira, his left foot, his playmaking. The midfield is changing shape at Porto. And given that Conceição, the whole time he's been there, has sometimes been criticised, despite having brilliant success, by a lot of Porto fans for favouring tough players over crafty ones, I think it's quite interesting to see them moving in that direction. Obviously, they're expected to work hard off the ball because that is part of what they do. In terms of the young Portuguese players that you've got on the Sporting side, the key one you've got to go for straight away is Pedro Gonçalves, Pot, who was like the successor, the de facto successor to Bruno Fernandes when he left. He's been brilliant since he arrived from Famalicão. Another one who didn't work out for Wolves, actually, when he was probably a bit too young. He's a terrific player on and off the ball. And if they're going to win this game, he needs to make a big difference in it.
Just very quickly, just a final point. He's taken out his missus and he wants to be impressive. Are there any sort of cultural tips that you might want to consider displaying or showing or being across during the course of the match?
During the course of the match?
Yeah.
Oh, what do you mean?
You know, do they have any sort of cultural differences in
strange
terms of
chants?
Or the way that, you know, like when you go to a baseball match, some guy comes, peanuts, I get you peanuts. And then what they do is he chucks the peanuts to the person in the middle of the row and they pass their dollar along one person and nobody ever nicks it in baseball. That's what I hear. Is there anything like that that happens?
That's a wonderful idea and maybe they should choose to bring that in. I would say the best way to impress is simply learn the Porto anthem off YouTube word for word and belt it out.
How'd it go?
Bit of an old classic. Well, look, I think Matteo can tell us next week when maybe you can send us a voice note when he's come back.
Yeah, please do.
It's a very good shout going to Porto anyway. My second trip away with my girlfriend was to Porto.
Really?
So Mattia, we're following very much in the same direction there.
Well, if you're following in Mattia's direction. You might be able to answer this email from John, because it's more or less the same direction.
Does a strange non-sequitur there, Dalton.
Well, no, it's more or less
as far as links go.
I have been to Sevilla. It's on the way to Portugal, okay?
I mean,
coming from North London.
That is an extraordinary stretch.
What is going wrong in Sevilla?
My answer to that is going to be shorter than Dalton's, shorter than Andy's Portuguese answer. They're not scoring enough goals. I mean, yeah, there was the 2-2 against Celta, but generally speaking, they're not scoring enough goals, Sevilla. Their defence is impressive. They're not conceding much, but they're not scoring. And, you know, there have been something like 4 draws in the last 7 or something. I mean, they're just not able to edge games in their favour. This, of course, was especially sort of excruciating when they missed the last minute penalty against Osasuna to try to keep the pace with Real Madrid. I mean, I suppose the hope is that someone like Martial can have some sort of resurgence for them and help them in that department, but they're not scoring goals.
I mean, that is what they have gambled on. I mean, they're paying him they're paying all his wages to try and get that done.
All the money.
Now and the end of the season. He had quite a flat debut, Osasuna. It's going to take him time to adapt. They simply don't have that time if they're going to stay in the title race. That is the issue. He's got to learn how to play with En-Nesyri as well. So, yeah.
They're having martial problems. No. They're declaring martial law. They might.
They will do when he starts banging them in.
Yeah, or if he doesn't.
He's no Tito.
He's going to deploy some martial arts.
He's no Bruce Lee either. I'm asking for a game of the week from both of you, as I always do.
I have something here.
Oh, you have?
I'm notorious for forgetting.
In fact, you've been doing your homework, so yeah,
I have enthusiastically. Yeah. No, I think there's lots to pick from, but I think I have to go Atalanta Juventus. Just because we haven't chatted about Serie A at all this episode, and just because it is Juventus
have been here last week.
Juventus have gotten their act together. They have now climbed into fourth in the table. They're in good form. They don't always look brilliant, but they're getting it done. Vlahovic just looked, when he came in against Verona, just immediately like he's the guy. He really hit the ground running in that game. Maybe he'll give them what they need to get over the line and qualify for the Champions League. But of course, Atalanta, just 2 points behind them with a game in hand, so good on their best day. Usually goals involved when they play. So I think this Atalanta-Juventus on Sunday night is the one to look out for this weekend.
So Lars has promised us goals?
I wanted to go for something Italian as well. I think the spirit of Nicky still lingers in the studio.
Should have been here last week, Lars.
Napoli.
I listened to Napoli the pod. It was a good episode.
Thanks. Napoli versus Inter is a big one on Saturday. But as Lars has gone Italian, and because I fancy ordering some.
You're getting Jamie, aren't you?
Some tapas and some cured ham to the house. I'm going to go for Saturday night. I'm going to go for Atletico Madrid against Getafe, because Atletico need to respond after that loss at Camp Nou, which of course saw them knocked out the top four last weekend. They've got a lot of issues there. Simeone is under pressure for a number of reasons, not necessarily internally yet, but of course the bit where Daniel Vass mangled his knee and Simeone was seen grabbing him by the arm and telling him to get on with it didn't reflect particularly well on his methods and was seen as allegorical. On the other hand, Getafe, it might not seem like the proper derby of Madrid, they looked dead and buried, totally relegated when Kike Sanchez Flores arrived back there for a second spell. 25 points in 15 games since he's been back, and they won 3-0 against Levante last weekend. So they could be digging Atletico deeper in the hole, I think.
And do you have a food pairing to go with that?
Yeah, I said, get all the tapas in.
Oh, right,
This weekend, I like to cook the chorizo for a little bit longer than other people do. If you've had any issues with that...
Why would you do that? Would you like a dry chorizo?
Obviously cook it in some wine or something like that. But, yeah...
You lot are living the dream, man.
Yeah, come on.
Compared to me.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.